And we are live.
Now, I suppose you all know how ordinary television works. You photograph something.
Sure, I do. You photograph something, then the photograph is split up into millions of tiny pieces, and they go whizzing through the air down to your TV set where they're all put together again in the right order.
You should open your mouth a little wider when you speak.
4, 3, 2, 1.
Love to watch TV, Mike?
You bet.
You like the killings, huh?
What do you think life's all about?
We're never going to get through if we keep going this slow through this episode.
Insert music here. Welcome to Mike TV. I'm your host, Lisa Krause, and you can now follow our show on Twitter at MikeTV1. That's MikeTV1. Please send us your suggestions for shows you'd like us to cover in the future. And also let us know how you would like to maybe become involved as a future co-host. Right now, our focus is, of course, on Game of Thrones. And joining me today is my awesome co-host, Autumn Fisher. Welcome, Autumn.
Hello.
So, here we go. We're on Game of Thrones, Season 8, Episode 4.
Yeah.
Episode 4 of the final season, this episode titled The Last of the Starks. Before we dive in, what were your overall thoughts on this episode?
I actually felt like it was really different than a lot of the previous episodes. I felt like it was a little soap opera-y, you know, like lots of reaction shots of everyone just like looking around and you're trying to figure out what they're thinking.
Yeah.
The word clunky comes to mind. I felt like it was a little clunky.
Fast. It was fast paced.
Maybe it was fast. There were parts of it that seemed like Game of Thrones, and then there were other parts that I did not feel like were Game of Thrones-y. You know?
Yeah, I agree. I've heard some criticism already out there, you know, like Missandei was fridged, you know, things like that, that I don't necessarily
agree
with.
What does that mean?
Fridged is a trope in, I guess, pop culture, where a woman is put into danger, which puts, I guess, the heroes or heroines steps in motion. I don't know that I've done it. I've explained it correctly, but it happens in everything.
You know, yeah. That's
put a woman in peril.
Yeah. That happens in Game of Thrones already.
I know. So, and then I've also heard criticism about how she was the only woman of color to be, you know, and to have her killed. Spoiler alert, she's killed at the end of this episode, folks. Hope you've watched it if you're listening to this. But, you know, but she's been on the show almost the entire show's run. So,
and a woman of color. She's from Noth. She's from Noth, which is a made up place. So let's all just relax.
We know people are going to die on this show. I don't think the showrunners are keeping tabs on their ethnicity or their sex or gender or any of that. So it annoys me.
We just had, oh my God, my mind. I don't know what happened. It was abducted by aliens.
The Dothraki?
Arya killed the main villain in the show, the most deadly villain. Grey Worm lived through a billion times that he should have been dead in that battle. It's all relax, everybody.
I agree. So that's my overall thoughts as well. I agree with you. I do think that there were times where it felt sped up, storylines I would have liked to have seen play out a little bit longer. Yeah. But of course, this is the end. They don't have time. Too bad they didn't get Jamie and Brienne together a long time ago so that we'd had more time with that. You know,
now, I disagree.
We'll get into that.
Ooh, all right, should I wait or should we just do it now?
Let's wait till we get there. We'll get there fast because I was like, this is happening.
Yeah.
Okay. So opening credits, we didn't see Dragonstone in the opening credits, even though our characters go to Dragonstone. So I thought that was strange, but we did see Winterfell in ruins.
And the icy tiles aren't coming up because they're all gone, but it's still icy, I guess.
Correct. And Winterfell, the walls were visibly burned and the interior shots showed everything in shambles. So that was a nice touch. And the show opens, of course, with the mass funeral with many bodies on the pyres. That was very sad scenes. I thought it was fitting. It was a good way to open the show. Danny, of course, whispers something to Jorah. And
like Lost in Translation style.
Yes, we'll never know. I rewound it even, put my subtitles on. I was like, what's going on?
Nothing.
No, we'll never know. And Sansa, of course, Sophie Turner just doing great acting. It's hard to tell who's better, Sophie Turner or Emilia Clarke this season. They're both so good. But Sansa puts that Stark sigil on Theon. That was very sweet. And then, of course, Jon does that very wonderful speech to everybody about how now their night has ended and
their night,
how
they should be
honored. But those words, he did use some words from the Night's Watch speech, which I thought was very nice, calling them that they were the shields that guard the realms of men.
We're here to say goodbye to our brothers and sisters, to our fathers and mothers, to our friends, our fellow men and women who set aside their differences to fight together and die together so that others might live. Everyone in this world owes them a debt that can never be repaid. It is our duty and our honor to keep them alive in memory for those who come after us and those who come after them. For as long as men draw breath, they were the shields that guarded the realms of men. And we shall never see their like again.
You know, that already just broke me up. I think whenever Jon Snow speaks, I just get teared up about when he yeah. speaks so eloquently to the masses.
Mm-hmm. He's just, like a king, like a leader.
Oof, very much like a king.
Speaking, what did Danny say? She was like,
Yeah. So
I've been braiding my hair while you guys have been stacking these bodies up.
I did say something. I was watching it with my cousin. I did say, well, she just got done with the battle of her life, flying around on dragons and everything, but not a hair out of place in that
wig. Yes. That was off-putting.
So any other thoughts on this funeral scene that you have?
They did it.
It was nice. They did a good job. And then, of course,
how they know how far away to put it from the castle. I'd be afraid it'd be like burning something that shouldn't be burning. That's a lot of fire.
It is a lot of fire. Hopefully they have some buckets of water nearby.
Yeah.
In case it gets out of hand. So then, of course, they're in the Great Hall. Everybody is, it's kind of somber as it would be after a funeral. And Dany really makes a pivotal move, which I loved, when she names Gendry Lord Baratheon of Storm's End.
Why did she have to do it so aggressively at first? Like, hey.
I think she was changing the tone in the room.
Yeah, but she was so mean. She was like, oh, yeah. Are you Baratheon? You know what he did to my family?
Well, she was speaking in her queenly manner, right? But she was also demonstrating to everybody who all ears on her. She wanted the spotlight on her. She got it. So I think she started out sounding harsh so that everybody's ears would perk up. And then showing her great generosity as this wonderful queen and bestowing this lordship upon him.
But she's not doing it for charity.
No, she even says as much to Tyrion, right? Like, see how I can get, how
I can be clever. I can win
their love. Yeah, say it again.
I can be clever too.
Yeah.
Ooh, I'm the only one who's clever.
Good. So, but then of course, so that starts the rejoicing. You know, I love Davos stands up and cheers to Lord Baratheon of Storm's
End. See, he knows how to break the ice. That was tense what she was doing. Mm-hmm. He's like, okay, everybody, Lord Baratheon, let's all give him a hand.
So, and then, but of course, what it leads to is everybody just cheering Jon on, thanks to Tormund calling him this king and this little badass who can ride a dragon.
Only a man can ride a dragon like that.
Which does not go unnoticed by Dany.
And what did he really do on that dragon? I mean, they both did some things, but really, he like was chilling with that dragon for a while she was still flying around.
Yeah.
And then she found the Night King and tried to burn him Dracarys with that guy. So she really did more on the dragon anyway.
True. It seems like he should have given a little recognition due to her as well. But, you know, he's a Jon man. So
he's a what?
He's a Jon man.
Jon man.
Tormund. He loves John. He's not gonna.
Oh, yeah.
Now he does say they do start a cheer. He does say to the Dragon Queen, and then she, I think, very eloquently stands up and says to Arya Stark, the hero of Winterfell. That was a real nice trick.
And then Gendry gets a boner.
Bound, but
that's when Gendry gets that boner.
I know.
Like, hey, where is Arya?
So they start the drinking game.
Yeah, which, never have I ever.
Yeah, I love that game. And what I thought was really funny is when Tyrion does say to Brienne, you're a virgin. Did you notice Pod drinks? You know, yeah. Podrick of Payton. You know, there was this ambiguity in earlier seasons. I can't remember which season, 4 or 5. Where Pod goes to a brothel and then is just praised about how big his dick is or something. Yes. You remember that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But I guess we're to understand that he really didn't have sex with those.
No. I thought that he was drinking like, oh, shit. You know?
I thought he was drinking.
It's not to anybody at the table. It's to one person.
I don't know. They kept looking at each other. Like,
but then later, you see him, like, while two people are talking, I think it's when, Sansa and the Hound are talking and she sits down with them. You can see Podrick in the background and two chicks on his arm and they're like, come on. And they leave together. So he's I don't think he's not a virgin.
Okay. Too bad. Well, poor Pod.
Wanted to be a virgin?
He's been spoiled. No.
Spoiled?
I'm just kidding.
Who wants a virgin anyway?
It's true. That's true. Speaking of, like, you know, I guess this was only Jamie's second sexual partner.
That's what ever. I was wondering.
So that pisses Brienne off and she leaves. Jamie follows, which was a very funny scene where Tormund finally is realizing he can't get between those two, and it cuts to him crying on Sandor's shoulder over her. It was
right. So that was a moment that I thought was a little clunky.
You did?
I liked the whole thing of like, he's sad and he's talking, and then you only just see that like stony face of the Hound. I get that. But when he was just being so crazy a second ago, and then you see him crying immediately after that scene ends with Jamie walking toward Brienne. I felt like that's part of the like rushed sort of feeling I got.
Maybe, but Tormund's a passionate dude, right? He can go, his emotions can go from high to low.
He couldn't get there. I felt like as an audience member that it happened too quickly.
Yeah. It
maybe if he had acted drunker or something about it, then maybe it would make sense. Like he was just really drunk and being that weird drunk emotional thing. Maybe, but there was just something about it. It was just a little too fast.
Well, it's funny. I think the funny part is that as the camera pans out and we see that he's actually saying those things to Sandor, who
doesn't care.
And as we know, their walk and talk last season when they went beyond the wall to capture the White, and Tormund is saying, I've got a woman back there, you know, at Winterfell waiting for me, the tallest, most beautiful blonde woman you've ever seen. And Sandor says, does she look at you like she wants to poke your liver out? Or he says something real, and Tormund says, you know her.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good callback to those two, you know, because in other words, Sandor was brought into Tormund's lust for Brienne last season. So that was a good bookend to that conversation. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Great scene also with Sansa and Sandor when she comes over and he's telling her.
When he growls at that girl, like, rawr.
Right. But then Sansa, he gets rid of the girl who's right. wanting to
he
get it on
made
with
you
him.
Happy for a little while.
And he probably should have taken her up on that offer, but I think deep down inside he's an honorable man, so he's just not going to, I don't know. Take drunken advances from a woman he doesn't know. Good on him. But Sansa comes over and you know, he does talk to her about, you know, none of these things would have happened to you if you'd escaped with me way back when I made the offer. And he calls her little bird, which I did like. Mm-hmm. And she says, but I would still be that little bird if I had done that. And it's odd that he also says, I heard
I'm glad I got like raped and brutalized. Yeah. I'm totally glad that I went through that.
And he said, I heard what happened to you. And she said, yes, but I took care of it. You know, I got my revenge in the end. He said, how'd you do it? And she said, Hounds, mm-hmm. which is funny because that's his name.
Yeah.
Anyway, then we get the, okay, so you probably hated this. I kind of rather liked it. The Gendry proposal to Arya.
Oh, why would I hate that? I don't hate it.
Because I was wondering if you thought that part felt soap opera. So he's just been made a lord.
All of the shots of people's faces doing nothing, and we're supposed to interpret what that's soap opera-y to me.
I see. Yeah,
that's what I meant.
So, but Gendry, you know, if you think about it, in Gendry's mind, he never has felt worthy of Arya, not even close, once he found out she was, a Stark, a highborn lady. So, he's just been made a lord. What's the first thing he does? Now he's finally worthy, goes and proposes to her. It was very sweet how she turned him down. She used her famous line way back from season one when they were in King's Landing and Ned was telling her as a little girl that she would one day grow up and become a lady and marry a lord and have lots of little lords and lady children. And she looked at him and said, that's not me.
I'm not a lady.
And then... when she met Nymeria on the road to Winterfell last season and realized Nymeria was half feral or mostly feral, when after she was inviting her, come to Winterfell with me, come home, she realizes Nymeria was not that same animal. And she said, that's not you. So this was, again, the final callback, again, another bookend to that line when she says to Gendry, I'm not a lady, that's not me.
I don't know how to be lord of anything. I hardly know how to use a fork. All I know is that you're beautiful. And I love you, and none of it will be worth anything if you're not with me. So be with me. Be my wife. Be the lady of Storm's End.
You'll be a wonderful lord. And any lady would be lucky to have you. But I'm not a lady. I never have been. That's not me.
I'm glad.
Yes.
I don't want her to. I mean, you know, maybe a part of her would want to go and sort of live a normal life, but I'm glad that she's going to go off and do things.
There's no reason why
she still has green eyes to kill
and be married to him. True. She's got things to do first, but there's no reason why in the very end when her
eyes, blue eyes, green eyes.
I
know who has green eyes. Cersei.
Is she really going to get both kills on this show? I wonder. We'll talk about that.
She's going to help.
I very possibly so. I do have some ideas, but so then we get Jamie and Brienne finally, and I liked that scene very much.
Okay.
Jamie's clumsy. He's awkward. He's never been with another woman.
Like, it's hot in here.
He's clearly trying to flirt and get their clothes off, but he doesn't
know how to approach it. I'm going to take these off.
He's clumsy with his one hand. I love that Brienne just took charge and they just went for it. It was the moment, I think, one of the moments we've all been waiting for. I know I especially have. You didn't like it?
I have not been waiting for that.
Oh.
I felt like they had a more sort of just like a really close friendship where, you know, they see things in each other and more they see things more about each other than other people see. And so they were able and they have a lot of similarities. You know, kind of outcast in a way because he was the Kingslayer, mm-hmm. even though he was, I guess, a golden lion or whatever. But, and she was supposed to be like ugly. But right. I didn't like them romantically.
Well, which of course, firstly, she's definitely not ugly. We all can agree to that. But I think
she does have that Bram Stoker Dracula comeback though.
I think they intentionally do that to her. The actress herself.
They were just fucking. Like, could she get up and like have a messed up hair?
I know. It's that good winter mousse that she uses winter up mousse. There in the north. So I think as a book reader, and I won't be this smug about the books all the time, I promise, but as a book reader, their relationship is much more intense in the books, and you feel that bond between them much earlier on, especially while they're on the road together. The show had them on the road together for a long time. You know, she was with him when he had his hand chopped off. He saved her from the bear pit. And even that bathtub scene, you know, was all that's from the books. And I think she's been the one, especially to witness his redemption arc. And especially when she was saying there at the end, you're a good man. I know there's good in you. He has so much self-loathing, and we'll come to it when we get to that part where he does leave her at the end. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I've always wanted them together. Maybe the show hasn't made the depth of that relationship as strong as the books did, but I was glad to see it happen. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so meanwhile, while that's happening, John and Danny are arguing over keeping his parentage a secret.
I told you I don't want it.
It doesn't matter what you want. You didn't want to be king in the North. What happens when they demand you press your claim and take what is mine?
I refuse. You are my queen. I don't know what else I can say.
You can say nothing to anyone ever. Never tell them who you really are. Swear your brother and Samuel Tarly to secrecy and tell no one else. Or it will take on a life of its own and you won't be able to control it or what it does to people. No matter how many times you bend the knee, no matter what you swear. I want it to be the way it was between us.
I have to tell Sansa and Arya.
Sansa will want to see me gone and you on the Iron Throne.
She won't.
I really liked, you know, I think Emilia Clarke will get another Emmy nomination this year. She is nominated every year, but this year I think she actually has a chance to win. This scene she was especially good in. She went from being a very loving, pleading girlfriend type to just this stone cold bitch. Like, I've already told you how we can make this work. You know, she just flipped from one to the other so quickly and seamlessly.
Like a psychopath.
Very much like a mad queen. Very much.
Whoa. Does she think about that, do you think? Do you think that she's worried that she'll become like her family mad king thing?
I think she's expressed that concern before, early on especially. I think she's expressed it to Tyrion and possibly...
But I thought it was mostly in defense of it. Like, I'm not that.
Right. But
she's getting pissed off.
She sees herself as this great liberator and breaker of chains and all of these things that she did in Essos that were so good to free the slaves. But then she gets to Westeros and is so narrowly focused on this one thing about having everybody bend the knee and she takes the throne. It seems like she's lost sight of really connecting with the small folk and finding out how she can best serve them before she just tries to take leadership.
Right.
Did I skip past the scene in the room where they're all kind of... Oh, no, that's coming up next. Okay, so anything else to say about this Daenerys and Jon scene? I kept waiting for him to say, but you're my aunt. This can't happen.
I don't care about that at all, do you?
I mean, it doesn't bother me because I know Targaryen ancestry is... full of incest, and so
right, but not for the North. Like, that's what Varys argues later. But also, right. I mean, I think as the audience have been like broken in to this whole, you know, incestual thing. I mean, is it Caster's kids? You know, like all of his daughters he's having. Is that Caster?
Craster.
Uh-huh. Craster. Yeah, mm-hmm. Craster's having sex with all his daughters, which is fucked up. I'm not saying it's not.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But we're just like exposed to it everywhere. Mm-hmm. Jaime and Cersei. All of the history of the Targaryens marrying their sibling, like it's mm-hmm. it's not as crazy to me. I feel like there's definitely some space for them to get married. Like I'm
right. fine with even that. In the Lannister lineage, going back, Lannisters were marrying their cousins and things like that too. Yeah. So it is definitely not heard of in Westeros.
And she supposedly can't have a baby that like that gypsy witch told her. So.
Right. But she makes a valid point with him when she says, you know, she says the North will never accept it if they knew the truth about you. And she's right. She's
yeah.
Right. Anyway, so she gets mad when he doesn't actually truly promise to keep it a secret. He doesn't really agree nor disagree to it. But anyway, the next scene is in the war room. I liked where they're talking about how many troops they all have left, but essentially they lost half. Right. And so that kind of answers some of our questions from the last episode. There's that One little quick line about how there's a new prince in Dorne who's pledged his support to the Dragon Queen. So I don't know if we'll see the Dornish troops swoop in at a moment when we think all is lost during this inevitable battle that's going to take place at King's Landing. Could be. Could be they just put that line in there for the fans to kind of let us know that they didn't forget Dorne and they're wrapping that up.
I'm still here.
Either way, I appreciated it.
Okay.
And if you notice, if you've done a rewatch, what's interesting, the foreshadowing in this scene is everybody advises Daenerys not to just go storm down there hellbent. Yeah. They talk about, you know, taking her time.
Sansa here strategy. Sansa is not being a bitch.
No, not at all. She recommends R&R for the truth. You know, if she just said, wait a fortnight, nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to change. Daenerys is like, oh no, my enemy grows stronger by the day. Nothing's going to change in a couple weeks, lady.
Yeah, they're not going to get those elephants. They're not going to ship those elephants over. Relax.
Right. So the plan is that Jon and the majority of the troops are going to march down, and then the smaller group will sail to Dragonstone, and then everybody's going to meet up at the gates of King's Landing, and that they'll just kind of wait outside the gates, basically starve them out, essentially, right? So then we see the Stark kids arguing at the Weirwood Tree. Maybe the last time we're going to see all four of them together, which is very devastating to me. But pretty doggone funny, I think, that John...
I like how plainly they spoke.
Yes.
I feel like in other situations, everyone is being so, like, coy with their wording. And they're like, what the fuck, John? Like, what are you doing? You know what I mean? Like, they're a lot more plain, and I really liked that.
I agree. I did like... This is, of course, where the episode title comes from. They talk about they're the last of the Starks. I think there's an earlier mention too, where Tyrion back in the Great Hall, Tyrion's talking to Bran about his wheelchair and says, "You're the true Lord of Winterfell. You're the last Stark trueborn." Yeah, and he says, "I just live in the past mostly now."
Except I wanted this wheelchair.
Yes, it's a very fine design.
Yeah, I wanted it. Hey, did I mention it's 100, 200 something years old? But I don't care. I don't want it.
But anyway, and then what was funny is John makes them swear to promise they won't tell, which of course you know is not going to be withheld. But
I wish they had some like secret thing that they could promise, you know, like some way that they like some Stark family promise, like pinkies in, and then you kiss the thumb, and then you say woo, and then you know they're going to keep the promise,
and then you howl like a dire wolf.
Yeah, ow!
So. But I do love that he turns to Bran and says, tell them.
Why did he do that? You tell him.
In my mind, I think it's because he couldn't even face them and bring himself to say the words.
Yeah, maybe so.
Because it also lets them know that, you know, their father lied to all of them too. Honorably, an honorable reason, yes, but it was all still a lie.
Mm-hmm.
So then we get a neat scene between Tyrion and Jaime, where Tyrion is genuinely telling Jaime that he's happy for him. And then, of course, they make a joke. He asks, what's Brienne like down there? And he talks about how he finally has to climb for it. That was kind of funny.
What did he want him to say? What's she like down there? Was he talking about, like...
I mean, yeah, he was. It's gross, but it's what it was. I know. But again, Jaime's only ever been with Cersei, and Tyrion's been with many. So, of course, Tyrion wants to hear about a new sexual conquest of his brother.
Sure.
Anyway, then...
Who shows up out of nowhere?
Ridiculously, in the midst of this conversation, boy, there's Bronn, just sneaking past all the Winterfell guards. No problem. Yeah, I know. I didn't like this anyway. I didn't like it at all. No, I love Bronn. Don't get me wrong. Truthfully, here's what should have happened to fix this whole plot line with Bronn. So do you know about the problem between Lena Headey and Jerome Flynn?
I don't know who those people are.
Okay. So Lena Headey, I think actually, who plays Cersei.
Oh.
And Jerome Flynn, who plays Bronn.
Okay.
In real life, IRL, they hate each other. They used to date. and had a very bad breakup, I guess.
Okay.
Before the show even started, I think. I don't think it happened during the show.
Okay.
But for that reason, they both have it in their contracts that they refuse to do scenes together. So you've actually, I think in the whole history of the show, they've only ever been in the same scene on the same set once.
Okay.
So here she is. She's going to be this lieutenant of Cersei's, or he is, right? Bronn's going to be this lieutenant of Cersei's now, but he can't even be in a scene with her. If you remember, again, the dragon pit scene from season 7, episode 7, the finale of last season, mm-hmm. When they're all parlaying in the dragon pit, before Cersei marches in with her folks, Bronn is there, and he suggests to Pod that the two of them go off to and have a drink and let the fancy folk talk.
Yeah.
That was really to get Jerome Flynn out of that scene before Lena Headey came in.
But wouldn't they be on the same... I mean, they're all there doing the scenes in different ways. They'd be on the set together.
Who the hell knows with the call sheets and things, but...
Well, I don't know how that would affect this. I mean...
Because what should have happened is either Bronn took a side and is standing with Cersei in most of these scenes, or Bronn should have ridden off with Jaime at the end of last season and been along with them this whole way. I feel like the show is looking for something for him to do and giving this ridiculous storyline, and then he's just going to sit around and wait it out, I guess, now until the war is over. I don't know. It was okay, I guess.
Yeah. What I mostly liked was just... Tyrion's surprise, and it was just like the first thing he asks was like, where's your drink?
Yeah,
what are you doing here? Like, first you'd think it would be, what are you doing here?
I would have rather seen him either turn and take sides with them and say, okay, if you're gonna give me Highgarden, then I'll be on your side.
That makes sense for him not to do that, because he's a cutthroat. Cersei's promised him what did she promise?
River Run.
He's like, what's double River Run? Because Tyrion always said that I would, whatever anybody gives you, I'll double it if you turn over with me. And so he says Highgarden. Jaime don't like that, because Jaime, whatever. And so, but they convince him because he has the arrow, the bow and arrow at their faces. So they're going to give him Highgarden.
I guess he is hedging his bets, right? Whoever's alive in the end, he knows he gets a castle either way. So he might as well just sit it out and wait it out. But I don't know. It just felt dumb. It felt inserted.
Okay.
And it feels like they could be doing more with Bronn, and they just haven't, and I guess won't. Maybe that could be the last time we see him. Who knows?
The next part is my favorite, when we see the Hound walking or going off. He's like eating some beef jerky or whatever, and Arya sneaks up on him. And then they're going south together, and he says it's because he has some unfinished business. And I yelled, Clegane Ball! Mm-hmm.
It's happening. It's happening.
I'm very excited. And I love Arya's it too. Gonna help him somehow, right?
Yes, I agree. So I love that scene as well. One of my favorites. Could have been longer. The thing that bothered me is we didn't get any goodbyes from Arya with her siblings.
I know. She said, I'm not coming back.
Yeah.
Maybe after the Silent Bronn, not Bronn, Bran told everybody, you know, John's true, whatever. They were like, all right, well, I gotta go.
It doesn't seem like that secret about John should have broken their family apart. I understand she has a mission she wants to complete, but it just seems so.
I don't think that's why she's leaving.
For fuck's sake.
On your
sake. For fuck's sake.
On your own.
Not anymore. I don't like crowds.
Me neither.
Why not? They all love you now. You're the big hero.
Don't like heroes.
Must have felt good sticking your knife in that horn, fucker.
Felt better than dying. You're heading to King's Landing?
Some unfinished business.
Me too.
To kill Cersei, I do.
No, but I don't think she's leaving because now she knows John's true.
No.
Everything.
But to act like I'm not coming back either, is she thinking she's on a suicide mission?
Yes.
Oh, I hate that. I'm going to hate it if she's killed. I'm going to hate it.
I'm telling you, somebody shitty's going to be sitting on that throne, and we're going to be losing our minds, and she's going to rip off the face, and it's going to be Arya.
There's definitely going to be a face rip off. So one thing I thought, we might as well say it now, because I don't think we see the two of them again. Okay, so I do think the only way to get to Cersei is she's got to be somebody familiar. She's not going to be able to get to, so she could.
Oh, it's Jaime.
She would have to kill Jaime and then take Jaime's face.
Yeah.
She still could take Littlefinger's face, right? We still could see her suddenly. Cersei might not know that Littlefinger's dead.
Oh, I never thought of that.
So we could still see her show up and suddenly, oh, she's Littlefinger, Cersei's greatest advisor. But then, of course, the audience would be in on it.
It's me, Cersei. Mm-hmm. Let me in. I'll whisper to you all night.
Or, and I know the physics don't add up, or the
right, physique, uh-huh.
But what if the Hound kills the Mountain and Arya somehow is able to take on the Mountain's face?
Mountain's already kind of dead. So maybe she could just take his face.
Maybe.
Wouldn't notice.
I don't know. I think, but yes,
and I don't understand the physicality part.
I don't either. How could she have been Walder Frey? I mean, but
I don't
she was.
Know.
So how could Jock and Hagar be all those different people? So
it's a good
okay.
Thing. I don't know.
So what if like we get this great scene at the end of the next episode? I think it'll all kind of go down with Cersei in the next episode. But what if Cersei's about to execute, say, Jon? And she turns and tells the Mountain, you know, pull out the sword. Same like we saw with Missandei this episode. Yeah. But instead, we see the Mountain pull out the sword, and then he turns and whacks off Cersei's head. And, oh my God, it's Arya! She pulls off the Mountain's face. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, that'd be fun. I hope that thing happens.
I don't think that'll happen, but it'd be fun. Okay, so we see
a
little
Jon
scene.
Says his goodbyes. Like, it's a very, there's a weird thing happening here where it's like people who are going to commit suicide and they start giving you their stereo or whatever. Like he's like, take my dog. Goodbye forever, Sam and Gilly and pregnant, whatever. Goodbye, yeah. Torment. Like he's acting like he's leaving forever.
I know.
And that's what I mean. I feel like the writers are treating it like this is going to be over in two more episodes. And it's not supposed to be like that. We're supposed to know that, but the characters in the show aren't supposed to know that.
That's a really good point. You know what? That's exactly it. I think you've just summarized any problems with this show. Like if they'd made it a 10-episode show and stretched some of that out.
Yeah.
But you're right. The characters themselves aren't supposed to know in any way, shape, or form this is the end. Now, one thing that we are supposed to understand is that this realm, this kingdom is very vast. So if Tormund goes north to his homeland and Sam goes back to where the Tarleys are from, I can't even think of that right now, yeah. But in the south, which is in the south west, and say Jon presumably stays with Dany in the southeast, which is where King's Landing is, they'll all be very far apart. And it's not like they have a phone or FaceTime where they can connect. So to see one another presumably would be, you know, every few years they'll get together, you know, at Christmas or whatever, but it's not, they're not going to see each other on the day to day. So I can handle the goodbyes that seemed so final because I think it was the understanding that they were going to be hundreds of miles apart for a very long time.
Sam didn't, I'm sorry, but yeah, but Sam and John didn't say these kinds of goodbye when he was going over to the Citadel. They're just like, oh, good luck. Goodbye. See ya.
That's true.
This is like, goodbye forever. Goodbye.
Yeah. Well, but he was going to the Citadel to train to come back as a maester at the Night's Watch. So I think that's before John was killed. And so they were thinking, you're going to train and be a maester and be back and be my right-hand man. You'll be my maester, you know? So
okay.
I don't know. It did seem like they could have given a little more explanation there to those goodbyes. And of course, John could have said goodbye to Ghost for crying out loud. What the fuck?
He's missing an ear. He loves his dad. Again, very soap opera-y where like we're looking, you know, we're watching John walk by through the gates and it's like Tormund, Sam and Gilly, Ghost. It just felt like, all right, I don't know. There's something weird about this episode.
Yeah, that was a little clunky. Before that happened, we got the scene, which was presumably right on the heels of Sansa learning John's real parentage because she's all weepy-eyed. She's watching the dragons fly around. We see that Rhaegal has holes in his wings and is flying all shakily. So we know that the dragons are recuperating. And Tyrion comes upon her and tries to talk to her about right before he leaves, he'd feel better leaving if he knew she were allies with Danny. And she says that great line about, I don't even want John to go down there. The men in my family don't do well in the South. This could all be very much foreshadowing Jon Snow's death. This could be the last time, you know, he sees all of these people. And then, of course, she tells Tyrion. She reveals she sucks at keeping a secret.
Yeah, she's like, she kept that for 15 minutes.
She says, what if there's someone else, someone better?
When she said that, I was thinking that she meant somebody besides Danny or Jon.
Oh.
But I don't think I'm right. But when I first saw it, I was like, who does she mean? Sorry.
Because her eyes were all bleary-eyed. I think she was sitting there with this emotional secret.
I get it. Yeah.
But I think also she's thinking, that's my brother and he's the rightful king. I should get behind him. You know, that she's also stealing herself for the fact that, she's going to raise up a ruckus about getting behind the rightful king.
Yeah.
Because she believes in him.
Yeah.
Again, it's not malice.
Yeah.
Strongly that he's the rightful heir.
I guess so. But she's always been kind of like, not power hungry, but, you know, she was trying to be the queen with that horrible, what's his name, blonde king? Joffrey. She saw that he was a monster, but she still was like, it's okay, let's believe him. He's fine.
He was a kid. Oh my god. She thought she was going to be queen. She had visions of being this.
Right. And so she's thinking a little bit like that now. Maybe.
Yes. Oh boy. Okay. So, they're on the ship.
Varys. Yeah.
Yes. Finally you get some Varys, your boy Varys. Yeah.
Go to drag queen brunch with me after this episode.
But this is a great scene with him and Tyrion. This was a great Tyrion episode, but he and Varys, this scene was really good. The talking while they're sailing and worrying about Danny's state of mind. And that is where Varys finally is like, she's his aunt. This can't happen.
Is this when, I don't know, this one they're talking in Dragonstone where he's like, yo, this is messed up.
Okay, that's a little bit more toward the end. So this is on.
But they're talking about how many people know this and it's not a secret anymore because like 8 people know.
I know. Now it's, he says it's not a secret. Now it's a, I can't remember what he says. Anyway.
It's like knowledge now.
Yeah. Now it's knowledge or common knowledge. So this is on the en route to Dragonstone and oh my God, Rhaegal goes down. Oh, I screamed.
I was in this scene. So like we're flying, you know, she's looking at the dragon. She's like, hey, and I was thinking this too. I was thinking the exact same thing. Like, hey, he's flying better. He's feeling good. Like he's recovered. They're doing a good job. And then.
And that one through the neck. Oh God, it was bad.
Yeah, that was sad.
Like, and we see Euron's fleet down there and they have those new and improved scorpions on all of their ships. And Danny swoops in to try to burn them, but they are all laser focused on her. So she gets the hell out of there right as she should. And he turns those scorpions on her ships. Grey Worm yells for Missandei to get down in the skiffs.
Right.
Whatever that is. Or I guess that maybe like skiff a drainage. Boat, get, you know, it's get a to drainage, some
I think. I think it's a drainage on the side of the deck.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's what that is.
I think so. I think you're right. So that's where, obviously, that's how they're able to get to her. And when it cut to black, it was a long cut to black. I thought, is this how this damn episode's going to end?
We checked the time. Like, oh, thank goodness, 34 minutes left.
Yeah. And I knew it was going to be a long episode. So I was like, it can't be over yet. It's not over yet. So we see them arrive on the shores of Dragonstone. We get the scene of Cersei, talking to Qyburn and Euron, saying, let the people in the gates, let them know, I'm here for their protection. But really, she's having them in the gates to serve as protection to her. So, you know, innocents will have to die to get to her. And then she also does let Euron know she's pregnant. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, as she's walking out, that's the reveal that they have Missandei.
It's like, yeah. We had sex 6 weeks ago. I'm pregnant, but the baby is going to be born in like 4 months.
Yeah.
I hope that's okay.
I don't think Euron can do math very well.
Yeah.
So then Varys does tell Dany, you know, reminds her, if you wanted me to tell you if I ever thought you were making a mistake, well, I'm telling you now, if you lead this attack, thousands of innocents will die. I serve the realm. He does the Varys thing. I think Dany is speaking very maniacally in this scene. She's very laser focused. She's extremely mad. Another one of her dragons is dead. Her best friend is captured. Of course she's mad, but she's making once again a wrong move.
She's
tactically.
She's using her emotion. She's letting her emotions drive her decisions. Mm-hmm. And then when she keeps talking about her children, the dragons being her children. I mean, I get it. But also, can someone just be like, bitch, they're not really your kids, okay?
Well, she thinks she did, in a way, bore them.
I know. Fires. I know. It's just like, okay, my child, you saw my... It's a different thing.
I know.
It's like people talking about their dogs as their kids.
People do it.
I know. But, like, you think... I know. I'm just saying. But someone in that boardroom or whatever, when they're talking, I would be rolling my eyes like, all right.
Final three scenes. Tyrion and Varys are now in Dragonstone discussing. Varys says how all tyrants have always believed in destiny. You know,
I like this scene.
I loved this
scene. I feel like this is the audience speaking. Either some people are on Tyrion's side and other people are on Varys' side, but I feel like this is the audience. Like, well, maybe she's this and maybe she's that. And maybe it's just like every other whatever. And it's like, well, maybe she's fucking up. Maybe this is that.
There was the weird moment, though, that I didn't know how to interpret. So what's your interpretation of it? So they're saying, Tyrion says that's treason. They're discussing treason. And Varys says, well, they've all thought it. And Tyrion says, right, but thinking is you can have your own thoughts. That's not treason. And Varys says, you know, he will serve the realm even if to personal costs.
Yeah.
And then, so they're kind of both coming to the conclusion that Jon would be the better leader. You know, they're talking about many other things, kind of comparing them. And then Tyrion says, when they finally deduce that it's Jon who should be the rightful heir, Tyrion says, what about her? And then Varys just gives him this look, and then Tyrion says, please don't. What the hell? Are they saying that Varys will kill Daenerys if it comes to that? Is that what?
Yes.
What the hell?
That's why they're like, they've been through a lot, right? So they can really speak honestly with each other. And Tyrion is really betting on Dany. I mean, he's seen what she has done with all those other communities, like setting everyone free and doing all these things. But I mean, she's getting out of hand, but he kind of is seeing it just like, this is the way that you have to gain power, you know, but Varys doesn't feel like this is the way that she should do it. And so he's going to try and stop that any way he can. I think that's fun. I think it's really fun.
In the books, there's a scene. There's a whole lot more about Dorne in the books. So I think that's another, it was a wink and a nod earlier, the mention about the Prince of Dorne. But there's a whole lot of characters that have been cut from the show for show economy reasons. I get it. But in the books, there's a Dornish prince who is sailing to Essos to propose to Dany and, you know, offer to wed her. Cause remember there was a Dornish woman married to Rhaegal, right? Or to married to Aerys. Aerys was married to a Dornish woman. Right. That's who the Mountain killed, was Oberyn's sister. Anyway, so there's this long history of Targaryens and
Dorns.
Martells. They're the Martells of Dorne. So of the Martells and Targaryens marrying. Anyway, in the books, he gets there, and this is where this is after Daenerys has been swooped off by Drogon, is back in Vos Dothrak, or back with the Dothraki being held. Okay. So he gets there and doesn't know that, because of course he's been sailing for months to get to her. So they let him know that her other two dragons are imprisoned in the catacombs, and he says he's going to go down there and rescue them, because after all, if he's going to marry the Dragon Queen, he should be able to work with those dragons too.
Sure.
So it, just like the scene we got with Tyrion goes and lets them free, you know, from their chains. from season 6 or 5 or whatever it was. But in the books, it's this guy, and I can't think of his name, but he goes down there and the dragons promptly burn him to a crisp.
Okay.
So when this happened with Tyrion in the show, book readers were on the edge of their seat wondering if he was about to be burned.
Yeah.
So there is still this speculation that Dany could burn Tyrion. I could see a case where Dany learns about Tyrion and Varys's treachery here and burns them both, which would be devastating.
But Tyrion wasn't being treasonous.
She's
already annoyed with him.
Yeah, think about the last scene where he goes to try to talk some sense into Cersei and still fails. She's probably very put out with him. So, second to the last scene is very sad for me. This is where Jaime learns from Brienne and Sansa what's happened at Dragonstone. And Sansa does say that smug line to Jaime about, you know, I wish I wanted to be there when they execute your sister. I mean, she is just delighted about the fact that they are about to just go and tear Cersei apart.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if this is what ultimately motivates Jaime to leave. So we see Jaime sneaking off in the middle of the night like a big old freaking coward. And Brienne does wake up and try to stop him, and she's sobbing and she's saying,
that he's a
good
man.
I know there's good in you. And he finally tells her all these things that he's done and then says, my sister is hateful and so am I. And rides off. It was devastating, and her crying like that was just so awful to see.
It was seasons and seasons of her not letting out those tears.
You're not like your sister. You're not. You're better than she is. You're a good man, and you can't save her. You don't need to die with her. Stay here. Stay with me. Please. Stay.
You think I'm a good man? I pushed a boy out a tower window, crippled him for life, for Cersei. I strangled my cousin with my own hands, just to get back to Cersei. I would have murdered every man, woman, and child in Riverrun. For Cersei. She's hateful. And so am I.
Not being vulnerable. She allowed herself to be vulnerable, and it was great. A great acting by Gwendolyn Christie and by, of course, Nikolai Nikolai Wostercald. I can't ever say his name.
Jamie.
Do you really think that he's just full of self-loathing and he knows that everybody's about to go after Cersei and that he thinks he has to try to protect her or talk some sense into her, take this stand along with her? Or do you think he's going down there as this last hope to say, just let it all go. Come back to Casterly Rock with me. Let's live happily ever after. Raise our child. We don't need to be these great rulers. We are just fine who we are. Let's just go be us. Or do you think he is going to kill her?
I don't think that's in his mind right now. I think he's going to King's Landing to be with her and support her. That's what's in his mind. And then while she's doing these shitty things and he's watching it all happen, that's when I think he'll change his mind and like think about him having the opportunity to be a good boy.
There was turmoil in his face and in his eyes. He had teary eyes.
Yeah, she's like a drug. He doesn't want to go back, but it's just the only thing he knows.
But I couldn't tell if you know how people, like characters in a lot of shows, are motivated to say these things that they don't really mean just so the other person won't follow them.
Oh, no, I don't think that's what's happening. I think he likes the idea of who he is with Brienne, but it doesn't feel right. It's like people who are, you know, who's gets deep. It's like people who were abused by their, like physically abused, like when they were kids, and then they get with a husband or something that also abuses them. And then when they divorce that guy and then they get with a guy that's nice and doesn't hit them or whatever, they're bored. And so they cheat on him with an abusive guy. You know what I mean? It's that kind of thing. It's like, I don't like the abuse. I don't like who I am with this person, but it feels right.
And obviously, if you have been in a relationship with your twin sibling all of your life, you're obviously a pretty fucked up person. So yeah, I guess that does make sense.
Yeah.
He can't allow himself to be happy.
Mm-mm, doesn't feel right.
Whew. And then, okay, so, and I loved that scene too. And then I really loved this final scene at the walls of King's Landing. Of course, John and the majority of the troops have not arrived yet, but
yeah, it did look pretty sad.
It looked a little meager, but yeah. But that's who came down in the ship with Daenerys. So they're all standing there up on the walls of King's Landing are more of the Scorpions, and of course the Mountain and Cersei are standing there with Missandei. And so Qyburn walks out, and I love that scene with Qyburn and Tyrion. Yeah. Tyrion really tries hard to talk some sense into him, but Qyburn's such a sadistic old goat. He just can't even, you know, Tyrion says something about, I don't want to smell, you know, burning children.
Yes, I don't want to hear the screaming of dying children. He's like, it is quite unpleasant.
Yeah, he acts like, oh, you get used to it.
Yeah.
So when he sees he's not getting anywhere with Qyburn, he just marches off and walks straight to Cersei, and really great acting here out of Peter Dinklage. He really says some, delivers some wonderful lines.
I like how he looked when he walked up. He looked like little.
I know you don't care about your people. Why should you? They hate you, and you hate them. But you're not a monster. I know this. I know this because I've seen it. You've always loved your children. More than yourself. More than Jamie. More than anything. I beg you. If not for yourself, then for your child. Your reign is over. But that doesn't mean your life has to end. It doesn't mean your baby has to die.
I know he is a little person, but also, like, he looked diminutive.
Right, he did. And he's scared, as he should be, because she raised her fist. I mean, she could have had him killed right then and there, and it's a little suspect as to why she didn't.
Because just like he said, there is something inside her. You know, he was making some headway when he talked about her kid, her baby, mm-hmm. because she does have a sensitive spot for that kind
of thing. And it's also her power play, right? Just executing him right then and there was not part of her plan. So if it doesn't fall into her maniacal plan, maybe it's, you know, it's not his time yet. Who knows?
Yeah.
I don't believe that she feels much of anything for anyone anymore. Her face at the end said it all.
Yeah.
So he does very much plead with her, tell her that he knows she's not a monster. Her life doesn't have to end. Her baby doesn't have to die. She ignores it, of course, tells Missandei, if you've got any last words, say them now. Missandei yelling Dracarys was wonderful.
I was worried that the dragon would be like, what? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, here I am. I kept waiting for it. I think that was her signal to Daenerys, like, fuck these people, burn them all, you know? Yeah. And so then, the Mountain beheads her, and Grey Worm is in agony. And again, great face acting by Emilia Clarke. We see her face just go from so devastated and sad to pure hardened anger.
Root and stem.
And it's happening. It's going to go down next episode 100%.
But all of those scorpions, they're going to get fucked up.
bad. It's bad. Well, they can't really do anything with that little piddly little group they've got there right now. So they definitely have to go and regroup and wait for John's folks to get there, which I'm sure will just be minutes into the next episode.
I know. How long did it take for them to come down from King's Landing in the first episode? Like, we've been on the road for months.
You're
like,
it's supposedly a month's road travel from King's Landing to Winterfell.
Like, JK, we got there in a day.
So what happens next? We've talked about some predictions all along. Any other final notes from you about ideas?
I was thinking that we can't have just another crazy battle like we did in episode 3.
It'll be a different style battle, but it'll
I guess so. I just feel like there's got to be something else for us in episode 5.
Clegane Bowl, baby.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm real excited about that. I think it'll be more like one-on-one type of things. I don't think... Gosh, yeah. Maybe it'll just be a big show from, you know, the dragon and everything. But I don't think it's going to be like big battle like we saw in 3. Or like Battle of the Bastards and stuff like that. I don't think they can do that again so close together to that other episode. So I just feel like there's something else that's going to happen.
We have to see a different type of battle go down, right? Different kind of tactics.
Yeah.
And I still think there's a chance the Golden Company could turn sides.
I hope so. They seem
maybe
like
we'll see Yara and whatever's left of her team swoop in. Maybe we'll see the Dornish swoop in. I agree. Just another battle right there. Just another all-out war at, you know, the gates of King's Landing. Doesn't really feel like a penultimate episode to an entire show.
Yeah.
Well, all right. I think that wraps it up. I don't have any additional notes either. I sure did love it, and I am excited for what's coming next. I'm very nervous.
Yeah. I know. I want to, like, every episode that ends, I want to go back to the beginning and, like, watch again. Mm-hmm. But then that would be a lot of time. It would take a really long time. You know, like when they get to one side of the Golden Gate Bridge, they have to turn around and start again. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
What? So they have to maintain the integrity of the Golden Gate Bridge. They have to, like, clean it and stuff. And so they move across it, and it takes, you know, however many months, maybe a year or whatever, to clean and to keep it, maintain it. And once they get to the other side, it's time to go back and do the other side again. So it's kind of like, that's what I want to do with Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. Every new episode that comes out, I want to go back to the beginning and watch again until Sunday, and then watch that one and then go back to the beginning again.
I've kind of been doing that a little bit.
Really?
Not all the way back to the beginning, but...
That's why you're so pale and thin and like sunken in eyes.
Yeah, exactly. I don't see much sunlight. Mike TV doesn't get out much. this past week I did watch just this season again. I mean, it was just on in the background. I wasn't sitting there the whole time, but I did have it on leading up to this week's episode. I'll probably do that because HBO on HBO 2 or whatever airs, it does a marathon all day long on Sunday.
Oh, it does.
Or it starts at, you know, 4 or 5 or whatever. So I just put it on and, you know, go about my business, and it's just on in the background. And then I can at least run in and see my favorite scenes again.
Yeah. Cool.
So, all right. Well, let's close it up here. Again, this is Mike TV. Follow us on Twitter at MikeTV1. And you can follow me on Twitter at Lisa Kraus, K-R-A-U-S. I want to thank Tim Andrews and Radio Labyrinth and everybody over there for allowing this into your feed. And especially thanks to Autumn Fisher. Autumn, tell everybody where they can find you.
You can find me everywhere online, social media at Auto Pritz, P-R-I-T-T-S. And you can also listen to my show, me and Greg's show, One Topic, and that's on all of your podcast catchers, I think. And also, if you like some hot sauce, go get you some local Chattanooga small batch hot sauce at hoffandpepper.com. And you can use our code RADIOLAB15 for 15% off your order.
I am so getting some of that. I hope everybody else does too.
I think there's a sale right now too. I think there's like free shipping, and then there's also like a spring something. So go look at their site, hoffandpepper.com.
They have a large assortment of flavors too. What's your favorite?
My favorite is just the original red, but I also really like the barbecue sauce. It's, and the dirty. There's also something called Dirty Dust, It's like the original red hot sauce, but it's just like in powder form. And it has vinegar powder in it, which is really, really good on popcorn.
Mm.
Like spicy. But I'm telling you, they have a super hot, they have a ghost pepper sauce that's too hot for me. I like the regular red sauce because it doesn't blow out your palate, so you can't taste anything anymore, and you're only thinking about how hot something is. It's so warm and delicious still. It's great. And I really do love it. I really do love their sauce, so you can check it out.
Well, everybody try some, and we'll see you next week where Cersei's gonna go down. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Dracarys.